It's like sitting up and walking, kind of. Send me a picture of how you walk.
Activity since 2026. First job is the hall. And see how my face.
I love this new feature.
I'm sorry, turn my microphone on. He brought props and he's got live props as well. One that's particularly smiley. Congratulations, Mr. Superintendent. Yeah.
Yep.
So Jim's going to update on the safety town. Hopefully you all remember this. It's still going on and it's behind the scenes, and Jim will catch everybody up.
Yeah. So about a little over a year ago, Kent Rotary decided on a community service project to create a safety town in the city of Kent. They had worked with the school district and they found a location adjacent to Holden Elementary School, an underused portion of a property that they had. And Todd from Rotary and Tom, they were looking to try to make this initiative happen. They put together a stakeholder group, which included obviously the school district, Parks and Rec, Kent Junior Mothers, Kent State University, and of course, they asked our help as well. Their first task was to come up with a vision of what this would be. One of the key facets that the committee came up with was that the safety town needed to be something that was beneficial to the community more than just 1 week a year. Okay. They ended up with a public park vision that's open to all. It's an asset to the Kent City School Districts for teachers and classes to be able to use that facility as part of their educational curriculum. An asset to the South End community where it's located. And basically, it's available to anybody who wants to use it. The conceptual plan, which I passed out earlier, the plan was on the first sheet, and a photorealistic image on the next page showing the safety town. For those who don't know, I just looked up the definition of safety town because I thought I would add that to this discussion. It's a small-scale street network where kids learn to bike and practice real-world road skills in a safe, car-free environment. So that's sort of the goal of what this facility would be in part. Some of the features on it, if you take a look at it, the larger part of it is the safety town itself with the painted streets and the signs and things like that. There's also what looks like a bike parking lot in the front. Looks like a parking lot, but it's for small scale. And it's actually used as like pre-function space. Before they go into the safety town, the teachers tell them, here's what to expect, here's the rules of the road, here's what you need to do. There's a walking trail around the site for parents who are, you know, watching their kids at the safety town, something that they could do. Seating all around the facility, and basically a safe place that kids can play. It's not near the road, it's not to the parking lot, it was intentionally put into the back of the site. So we wanted to show you the images of all the work that's been done by Rotary, the stakeholder group and others. They've got a consensus image that everyone thinks is a wonderful asset to the community. The next two steps we can do sort of in parallel. One is fundraising to get funding to help fund the rest of the project. Rotary's already got a significant grant from the state of Ohio. And then the other is to come up with a joint maintenance operation ownership agreement between schools, the city, and others as part of this to make this a public space. So while Rotary helps construct it, someone needs to make sure it's taken care of afterwards. So just want to give you this update on the best project. This project has been moving.
Anybody have questions? Tracy?
Will this area be open 24 hours a day for anybody to come in and use, or is it only going to be used when, you know, there's like teachers with classes and things?
This area is not going to be locked up or enclosed. Okay, no fence, no gate. So it'll be, that's part of the ownership agreement is, you know, as far as like access at night. Since it'd be the school's property, that's one of the things we need to work through. Did I answer the question?
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're asking, is it going to be a community park? Yes. So it'll be as open as any community park. That was the kind of the thought process was as we started down this path and was thinking very specifically just Safety Town once or twice a year. I don't even remember, was it once a year? Once a year. And it was like, well, if we're going to go to the effort of build something but for once a year, why not take the opportunity to do more? Rotary came up with some great cash. We got great partners. We got a great concept. It's been a pleasure to work, you know, kind of as a group and with larger stakeholders to figure out what this looked like. And trust me, each element was thought about. It wasn't just like, hey, let's throw this in there. Well, I guess we started with some haste, throw this. But then it was like, all right, we're going to go through what makes sense here in a project like this. To be more of a legacy, especially remember this is in the South End. There's been a lot of exciting things in the South End, trying to historic South End recovering. So this was another way to, you know, put an exclamation mark on that. It's all fun until it comes time to pay the bill, and we do have to figure out that. That's what Jim is sort of saying. He's waving the pretty picture, and then that's when he starts reminding everybody that. It's not free. And, you know, that's why we worked with Angela and Tom and the city has all said, look, maybe amongst the three of us, we can afford to maintain it. We'll figure out what that looks like. So it's another example where, you know, any individual or organization probably wouldn't be able to pull this off by itself. And we're grateful that the school system put the land on the table. So big thumbs up for that. And we just now, as Jim said, have to detail how this is going to work from this point forward.
It'll be like the other parks that closes at dusk type of thing.
That specific question hasn't been answered yet.
I hate to ask the parking question, which is not my favorite question, but I see, you know, there's cars around the historic South End Center. There looks to be a fair amount of space there for people to drive over here and park. Is the South End Center also owned by the school?
Mm-hmm.
So that would be probably okay for people to park there.
Yes.
And, mm-hmm. you know, if they should come over, you know, with their cars.
Exactly. And that's part of the agreement that needs to be so worked out is that space, correct me if I'm wrong, Tom, is currently used during school time periods and would need to be used during school periods. But at that time, the clientele is at school and not at the park, most of them. So this also was meant to be a neighborhood park where kids from that neighborhood can walk to access the school.
Park. So. Or ride their bikes.
Or ride their bikes, absolutely.
On the roads.
Thanks. Further questions, Fanny? Thanks, Jim.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Melanie, if you're ready. I was going to say it's starting to get a busy season for Melanie, but I thought, oh, it's always a busy season for service department, whether it's snow or brush collection or leaf collection or hydrant flushing or brush chipping. Go ahead. Let them know what you're doing.
It makes life fun. Absolutely. So yeah, just real quick, spring cleanup has begun and is underway starting this week. Our brush chipping began this week in the southwest quadrant, while the heavy duty trash pickup began in the northwest quadrant. We work clockwise so that we don't overlap, and that way there's a week between where we were and where they're going to come. As a reminder, just remember that all soft cover items such as couches, chairs, mattresses, or carpeting need to be wrapped in plastic. Refrigerators, freezers, anything with Freon can be collected. You just need to give us a call the week before. And as always, we remind you to take the doors off of those for safety. Automobile tires will not be picked up at the curb. But again, this year, the city will provide a drop-off location, which is actually at 9:30 over Holt on Thursday, May 28th from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. and there we'll be collecting the tires. Residents just have to show their driver's license indicating their address, and that we'll collect up to 4 tires per household. Another item that we have going on, which is pretty exciting, if anybody's been looking up in the air towards Kent State to the east, we have had our 2 water towers on that property under construction, 1 at a time, of course. The 500,000 gallon air spherical tower is almost completed. You'll notice that it received a new paint job and KSU's logo is up there. It's brand new, looks really good. And we always hold our breath because it's really hard to tell, are we in the right angle so that you can see it from the direction that you need to see it. And it does look really good from the 3 directions that we have to look at it. So that's almost completed. We're ready to bring it back online. And it's perfect timing because as KSU is exiting with their students, we're able to bring that one back on and take the other one down and hopefully have that completed by the end of this summer as well and back on before students return. My final item is I had received a couple phone calls and Dave had talked to me about perhaps a problem that continues to persist here in the city, and that is our city deer versus country deer. So I had the opportunity to attend a seminar on April 8th down in Columbus by ODNR. It's been about 10 years since the last time I had attended one, and a lot has changed since then. Some of the biggest attributes that have changed with city deer is that they've become very domesticated and they've learned to adapt to backyard living. They have little or no fear of humans. They've adapted their diets to more than just plant life, and they thrive here due to no natural predators and no natural selection in the wild. We are beginning to internally collect the data on deer, such as deer versus car crashes, their severity, how many calls do we get annually for deer removal along the side of the road. And yes, we do, unfortunately, from time to time have and or residents find injured deer in the rear of their property that we have to dispatch police to, and then we as the service department have to handle. We're beginning to collect all of that data. There are some services that can come in and do some drone looking and do some assessing as to how many deer per square mile, per square foot we would have within our city limits so that we'll have a better idea of exactly how large our herd tribe is. The unique thing that I found out as well, deer will travel up to 50 miles, go out and come back in. So as food becomes diminished here, they travel farther and farther out, but they always come back because they can remember where their good source of supply food has come from. We have noticed that there is an uptick in the spring right now when babies are being born. And then of course, during rut season in the fall from October to about December. Those are natural and normal. And we're going to learn some ways that we're able to handle. It's more of a herd in the spring and then individual animals in the fall that cause those problems. One of the things that was noted though, that are ways that you can help not promote this is not to feed the deer. And believe it or not, just feeding your birds, they've learned to adapt and eat that. So when you feed your birds, you're actually feeding probably more the deer. If you put out corn or something like that for squirrels or smaller animals, they're eating that as well too. So that's one of the ways to deter them from there. Unfortunately, there are no longer any plant-based items that deer do not like. They may not particularly like the flavor of it. They'll take one bite, eat everything else around it. But if that's all that's left, they're gonna come back and eat that as well. They've actually become accustomed to electric fences. So while the first time it may shock them and they run, typically they come back, they figure out how to eat around that, and then the shocks become less and less effective on them. So they've become very, very smart to be city deer. I kind of envisioned, you remember Tom and Jerry, where there was the city mouse and the country mouse? I kind of feel that's what we have going with deer now. Like they're calling their country people, come on in, we're gonna have a feast. So at any rate, we're going to take some time over the next couple months, kind of assess this, get this information together, and then come back and report to council with where we think we might go, and then see if there are any options with ODNR outside of the typical that you hear about, which is calling and those kinds of things. But see if there are other things we can do, whether it be ordinances that prohibit feeding or certain feeding, and or just educate our residents on helping them to understand the right things to do, maybe how to properly compost. We found that that was a big problem in some cities. People compost, but they just throw it in a pile in their backyard versus doing it the right way. So we'll work on some of those things and then report that back to council later on this year.
Questions for Melanie? Heidi?
Yeah, did they discuss birth control?
Actually, they did. That is no longer one of their to-go-to plans. And the reason being is that it's very, very cost ineffective. It will cost anywhere between $2,000 and $5,000 a deer, and you need to hit 90 to 98% of the population in order for it to be successful. The other problem that it was you have to put two doses in a deer. So when you're shooting at them to get the first one in, because that's how they do it, they also had to put dye within that so that they were able to identify those deers 2 weeks later when they were out trying to get them. There was a lot of things that happened with people protesting the dye that was in those, but then more effectively, they were finding that they weren't able to hit them the second time around for that birth control. The other thing is that it really only lasts 6 to 9 months. And so they were finding that really it wasn't functioning at all because they weren't in time getting back out to do an annual renewal of that. So they're not really recommending that. They actually did show us where they produced like hysterectomies and those kinds of things as well. That, of course, was very interesting because they used a service garage with tables and vets come in to do it. But that ranges anywhere between $12,000 and about $20,000 a deer.
Oh my God.
So it became very cost prohibitive to be able to provide those options. But it was very interesting in some of our southern cities down there in southern areas. It was an option to try, but not successful.
Melissa?
Have you learned anything about the wasting disease? So I haven't noticed it from the spring already, but last fall and into the winter, I did see a lot of deer with the wasting disease. So did you get any feedback on that? Because right now it's... Okay. All right. I can tell from your expression that there's something.
Honestly, that's a helper to us because it does take them out by natural selection. Mm-hmm. The issue is that it is very contagious and it does continue to move on. So, while it looks like a detriment and it's not very pleasant and what comes from it isn't good, they actually said it's actually a good thing to have, especially within city limits, because it will rid you of more of the deer than probably any of your other programs if you're not into doing something such as the killing cycle.
But isn't there a crossover to some other native wild animals like raccoons and possums? Aren't they also...
They didn't really cover that much as far as that relationship with us, but they did just do it as a way of doing that. But it's an excellent question that I'll make sure that I ask.
Yeah, just to know. Thank you.
Other questions for Melanie? Thank you, Melanie.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It.
I know Nick he must not be here though. Jordan, Nick's not here, is he? He's not hiding back there, is he? No, and that's all right. He was going to update council on the surplus. I think what he was going to say was surplus.
Yes.
Was it servers? In the police department. Yes. We're going to have an unauthorized item for you. I think I said to him, why don't you just mention it in this session? But we must have disconnected after. But on your 2 weeks, we're going to ask your authorization to basically retire some servers that are no longer needed. You do that usually pretty routinely, so it's not a big deal. But I just said, well, I want you to let them know. So I'll let you know with not very much clarity, but that's coming in 2 weeks.
Okay, that's all the staff updates, I take it? All right. Let's move on to community development. Ms. Schaefer-Bish.
Yes, it looks like we have Bridget coming up to discuss the tax incentive review update.
Yes, thank you. So the City of Kent provides real estate exemptions on investment in commercial properties through the Community Reinvestment Act, or CRA program, and the Enterprise Zone program. The state has established that each county must have a tax incentive review council to look at these exemptions annually to see if they are performing and hitting their investment commitments, employment, and payroll. This year, the Tax Incentive Review Council met on March 11th and reviewed. We have basically three CRA agreements, and these are called post-1994. For those of you that may not be familiar, we do have what are called pre-1994 CRAs in the city, but they are not an agreement. They are an automatic exemption on the valuation increase between the property before there was investment and post-investment. So this is looking at those that were approved after under the post-1994 rules. The CRA agreements include the Mazda property and the two Claven properties out on West Main. I will note that the Claven ones are still under construction. So they are still reviewed, though, because once those are filed with the state of Ohio, they are considered an active and open agreement. We also have the Davy Tree Enterprise Zone, which was the construction of their third wing expansion out at their corporate campus. All of the reports provided by these agencies that were active showed that they were in compliance with their commitments, and the Tax Incentive Review Council voted to continue all of the agreements. The Ohio Revised Code does require council to accept the Tax Incentive Review Council's recommendation annually, and that's what I'm here for tonight. I was going to ask for emergency, but I don't know if I can do that with the number. Can we?
No, you can't. But that will come next week when they need to go.
Thank you. I would like to ask for emergency then. Thank you.
I think many of you know what this kind of generally is, but just as a reminder, it's a tool in the toolkit that the state provides allowances for us under the community reinvestment. When she says CRA, community reinvestment areas, and there's, like she said, different eras of those, and they have different allowances for what the city tax breaks they can offer. And, you know, savvy investors, I think, take advantage of that. It works good for the city because the payback is always good in the long run, and it's good to stimulate investment. So as long as it continues to, like, you know, meet their math, so to speak, and that's why she has a review board, and they review kind of the numbers each year, and then they make a recommendation, and usually it's fairly routine for you guys. I mean, we can dig through details, but that we actually had a conversation. The council that has seen it 20 years in a row got to the point where they were just like, just put it on unauthorized and it's good. Yeah. But I said, no, there's enough new people here. We really
want to see everybody. Two of
I know. The two,
yeah. We wanted
three.
Yeah. Yeah, three actually. Yeah. And the CRA program, the reason why it is a strong economic development tool for the city to use and incentivize investment is because it does require job and payroll commitment. So you can grant a CRA without having that and just based solely on investment, but it also requires retention then of jobs. So that is a benefit. And the percentage of that exemption on that, again, it's just on that change in valuation, is often dependent upon the job creation and the payroll commitment in addition to the overall commercial investment.
Any questions from council? Seeing none, any questions from the audience? All right, back to council. Is there a motion with the emergency?
Second.
Any comments? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. It passes.
Thank you.
First reading.
Yeah, I did.
All righty. And now you will want to stay put, Bridget, but the next item on the agenda is the Main Street Kent Downtown Business Poll for Franklin Avenue closure.
Yes. This is a discussion item. This basically, based on some dialogue that came out of the discussion last year, a poll was issued, or a survey question was sent out regarding the time frame from which Franklin Avenue is closed. It went out to 36 DORA participating businesses, and I did include a DORA map because I think it's important to see that how large that footprint is. And of the 36 businesses, there was 24 businesses that responded back, which is a pretty high response rate for anyone that does statistics, 67%. And of that, 75% were in favor of establishing a time frame that was slightly reduced from what is under the current ordinance. The current ordinance is that the Franklin Avenue was closed from the first Saturday in May through the first Saturday in October, which is roughly about a little over 5 months. The discussion question was establishing it to be Memorial Day to Labor Day. With anybody that grew up with a pool, a community pool, that was often the summer for us. We were got our pool pass to go, and it wasn't open until Memorial Day, and they closed it on Labor Day. So that I do have Heather here, Executive Director for Main Street Kent, to speak on this matter. I will say, obviously, this year, the ordinance is still in effect, and Franklin Avenue was basically closed down for that first Saturday in May. So it would not apply to the opening of this year's season, if there's any decisions that council wants to make with regards to that time change.
Heather, do you have something to say? I'd like, we would appreciate it.
Hi, everybody. I don't have a whole lot to say about this other than asking the businesses for their feedback and giving them an opportunity to comment at the end was kind of interesting. We did share some of those comments with Bridget, and I think it was included in the memo. I think it's worth mentioning that several of the businesses on Franklin Avenue are in agreement that, like, enough's enough. Mm-hmm. Like, this, you know, it kind of evens out the playing field to have some limitations as far as how long this eternal patio goes on. You know, and I also, I think it's important, as far as us Main Street Kent being involved in this conversation, a couple of people on their surveys said, like, they don't care what we think anyway, so just do whatever. And I think that's why we're kind of, why businesses come to us to say, like, hey, you know, can you go up to bat for us, because they don't want to stand up here and be called a complainer or like, that's not fair kind of thing. I think, I just think it's widespread enough that the response to this suggestion of a shortened time frame was very positive. That I think it's definitely worth looking at. We continue to work with businesses on creating other areas that are nice to sit in and enjoy and people watch. And honestly, I really don't want to sit on Franklin most of the time because I see everybody down there all the time anyway. So I'd like to sit at a couple of tables that the city moved around on Main Street and stuff. And so we're working with someone on North Water to get some weights and put some umbrellas on their tables, the city tables out there, and they'll take them in every night. And we talked to Hometown Bank Plaza about getting the splintering picnic tables taken out of there so they can get some new ones. And they're working on their trees, so that getting them cleaned up so the grass will grow better and make that a nicer area. So really the bottom line is just making it so there's just tons of really nice places for people to enjoy being outside, whether they're having a beer or an ice cream. And we have ideas about trying to kind of reclaim Dan Smith Park too. That's another underutilized area. So this is just one of the components of really trying to maximize the start awesome, beautiful, walkable, enjoyable downtown. So, yeah, I don't have anything really else to say. I think it's all pretty well explained in the memo.
Any questions from council? Yes, Melissa.
Thanks, Heather, for doing this diligence to make sure that we have good feedback from it. But if I looked at the statistics correctly, so there were six people on Franklin, business owners that responded. Three were in favor of that reduced schedule, and three were not in favor of that reduced schedule.
A couple of those comments were like, make it longer.
Yeah, some painful moments from last year. So I'm really glad that we opened on time, since we didn't have a chance to discuss this. The one reason why we were doing it that first weekend in May is so that graduation and families coming in could have the opportunity to take advantage of that closed street. I don't know how much people actually do take advantage of it. And I wonder if you have any information about that, like what, you know, how much use it gets during that, you know, during graduation.
I think the weather is the big factor.
Absolutely.
And I just drove by after work and I'm like, diehards, they're out there having a pizza or burrito and a couple of Doras. I'm like, look at you go. I mean, it's 50 degrees out there, but they're excited. So
yeah. Including
I can't really,
husbands.
Huh? Yes. Including your husband, but just pointing to like certain certain holidays or celebrations or whatever.
Sure.
I can't say.
Anecdotally, when we did it the first year in 2022 and 2023, I got comments because after graduation, people are dressed up and they go to dinner. And so couldn't actually necessarily get through there to dinner. I don't know. It's less of a sit outside and have a drink and more of like, my son's graduating actually on Saturday. We made dinner reservations in Rocky River. You know, I mean, it's like, so I just, those were anecdotal, but I don't know if there's a lot. I will go down this weekend though.
That would be my only question. I think closing on Labor Day makes a lot of sense because the weather starts to deteriorate, and I've seen, like, just my own personal experience, see the drop off after Labor Day of using that space, and why should we keep it closed if people aren't utilizing it? But some data around that could be impactful.
I think too, so you get through the summer, everybody goes back to school, and you drive by there, and nice or not, there's very few people out there during the week because people went back to life, as we all know it. And so the weather can stay beautiful till November, if, you know, we never know. Yeah. But I think once summer is over, like a pool, it's like, you know, just, I think it was actually one of the Franklin Avenue businesses that said something about this time frame work. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but like I said, I mean, half said no, half said yes, and half said like, or through October, so we can get Halloween too. Like, well, that's back to the point. Like, can we just try to make this like seasonal, like put some parameters.
Helpful feedback.
And Santa, right. And then, oh, what about Oktoberfest? That's fine. I'll fill out another thing and we'll close it for Oktoberfest for a day. And I mean, that's anywhere from a month to 6 weeks later anyway. It's not. And we look, and you also look at how many times businesses have had concerns about road closures for events and stuff. Like, this is like the complete opposite of that.
I think this is helpful feedback. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. Tracy, could we do a compromise, like open at the beginning of May and then close on Labor Day? So that way we take into regards what the businesses wanted, but then also kind of what the residents wanted. So just compromise. You think
the residents being, what do you mean about the residents being,
well, they want it, they like it open from the beginning of May till the end of October. Yes.
Oh, we didn't pull the community. No, I'm saying
yeah, I know, but that when they all showed up for the one council meeting, we knew that's what they wanted. So maybe compromise and open it the beginning of May and then close it down Labor Day.
Well, seeing how the dates for this year are already set, maybe pulling the community is a good thing to do, because I don't know how many people, I know from a few people I talked to, they uniquely go for this. So they wouldn't be going somewhere else if this wasn't happening. So do we take advantage of the summer and try to pull the community to see what they want and see where we're at, and then try to get something done before, like after, or even if it's during the season, to have in place for next year.
Any more questions? Any questions or comments from the audience? Okay. Do we need a motion, or are we going to?
Can I just clarify? If it's going to be a community poll, that would be probably something that the city can put out, because their client base is the businesses within. So it would be something that we could put together. We could do it through the website or something like that. Yes, is that what council is considering? Okay.
So does it make sense to delay a vote?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, what's going on? Because it says no actions necessary unless council wishes to amend the dates, which we might, but we don't know yet.
Yeah. So we'll proceed with getting a survey, short and simple one, and that can be communicated. We'll work with Dom on that and get that out, and we'll see what feedback we get over. You know, we could put it out there for 3 or 4 weeks and see what we get.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you, Heather.
Thank you.
All right, the 2026 Social Service Funding Awards. Drum roll, please.
Yes. So this is typically an information-only item, but again, because we have new council members, unfortunately, that aren't here to hear about it, we wanted to update everyone on that social service funding. And again, we are eternally grateful for the fact that there was a motion to increase that funding to $100,000 last year. It really allowed us to make commitments to these projects that make substantive impacts in the community. So, of course, we still always had more asks than funding, but it was a lot easier to even the playing field than it had been in prior years when we only had $65,000 to work with. So for the funding, I'm going to just real quick go through it and give, because you have the spreadsheet and you got the memo, but I think it might be good to give you a little idea of those projects. Mm-hmm. So Coleman Health Services, the Eviction Prevention and Housing Startup Program. This is basically for persons that have persistent and chronic mental illness. Many of them are receiving SSDI assistance as well as other assistance. And sometimes they get into situations where they can't pay utilities or rent. So this basically ensures that they don't become homeless. I can tell you that the program has been very successful, and actually we've made referrals to the system. So this project's one of my favorites. Community Legal Aid is another great one. So they provide legal services for civil actions, and we get an average of 15 residents are assisted, but oftentimes this is stuff with foreclosures, wills. We often get divorces, some domestic violence issues come out of this and are then referred to other assistants. So this, they do a lot, all the attorneys, by the way, that work here do it on a volunteer basis. So which is pretty neat. Access Family Services, Housing and Emergency Support Services, which we call HESS, basically serves persons that are in basically emergency crisis of homelessness. It does provide wraparound case management and referral services for anyone that needs those comprehensive supports. So it'll get them on SNAP, it'll get them on SSDI, it'll put them in voucher assisted housing. So it provides case management services, not just a bed in Miller House. Access Health Services Portage Area Recovery Center basically provides sober living. We actually supported this program with about $75,000 through CHIP a few years back. And the facility has been successful. They are basically substance abuse tested. They receive vocational services and GED services. Many of them also do have, basically there are a lot of women in this program, and some have children. So they are allowed to stay with the parent. Access Health Services Safer Futures is the domestic violence shelter. I think that's all I need to say on that. Needless to say, domestic violence is in every community, including ours. The facility is small, but it is always full and making referrals oftentimes to ones outside of the community. It is a complex situation, and the case managers there work not only with the persons being assisted, but also with prosecutors and police. So it is a great program as well. We also support Love Light, Building Community, Building Futures, which is it's a youth program run by Betsy Justice. She focuses on programming for low-income children. She provides lunches, programs, backpacks, does field trips. So Betsy works very hard and assists youth with this program, and she's been doing it for years since I've been here. So mm-hmm. We're going on 19 years. I think she was doing it before that. We have a new program introduced by PMHA. It's a youth camp as well. We gave them slightly less because we haven't actually seen it's a new program. So, they had a different program that we had supported for many years, but this one is to basically assist children from 5 to 12 that are in public housing. We actually have two public housing facilities in the city, and the Athena Gardens and the Heritage Knolls. There is also public housing duplexes, and so this would be targeting those kids. It's open to all children that are actually receiving even vouchers, voucher assistance, or their parents receiving voucher assistance. It's going to provide basically 9 weeks of all-day youth activities and summer camp activities 4 days a week, including outside field trips. They estimate assisting about 179 kids. Huh. So that's pretty good. And then lastly, we have never actually until last year had this included in our social service, but council allowed us to amend the social service programming to allow for food pantry assistance. So a little goes a long way. And so $5,000 was given to Kent Social Services, which is actually an increase from last year, which was $3,000. And that's used for individuals and households that need direct assistance. I will tell you, for those that don't know, they actually do go through an application process, and it is determined basically the assistance is it, you can get food there at any time, but those that receive it on a regular basis go through an application process and are provided supplemental food. And with the cuts in SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, needless to say, this program is important right now. So I can answer any questions, but I don't really need a vote. I just want you to know what great things we can do with that money that you provided us.
Any questions? Yes, Melissa.
Do we have any problem getting data back for how the money was used so that we can actually see the impact in the community, or are they all these organizations? Is it a requirement of the funding?
It's a requirement.
Okay.
So they have to provide that. The application is pretty specific. And then with the, we basically reimburse. So they have to provide the data that shows how the money was spent and how many beneficiaries there were through the various programs.
Okay, great. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anybody else?
Yeah.
Yes, Eric.
Only because I'm new.
No, it's okay.
The increase from the monies that were asked for, did that help us help more agencies, or did it just give more money to the same amount?
Well, that we advertise it, we post it in the Record Courier, and we also put it out on our website. But the community only has so many nonprofits and programs, so we didn't actually get any new applicants with it, but we were always needing to give the applicants less than what they were asking. So with the increase last year of $35,000, it really made a big difference. But we do advertise, and if you know a nonprofit that would be interested in ever applying, we did have an application, I should say, from the Akron Food Bank. So the issue with that, though, is obviously, actually, Kent Social Service gets food assistance through the Akron Food Bank. That's where they buy the food. Kent Social Service buys food from that. So they would have had to, we have to have them specific to the city. And so they wouldn't have been able to do that because they're not in the community and they couldn't have measured it, you know. So unfortunately, we weren't able to hit, she understood. It was a new grant writer, and honestly, kudos to her for trying, right? But because it had to be specific to Kent residents through that program, we weren't able to assist them.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Just so I can mention, I mean, I think it's obvious, but when you're newer, you don't necessarily, we don't have a social services department, but what we do, as you can see here, is we rely on the agencies in the community that specialize in those areas. So rather than Bridget having a staff of experts, her mm-hmm. staff is the extended family throughout our community. And we're a small enough community where that seems to work pretty well. I mean, so like at times of the year when I know council has shown interest at the wintertime with warming centers, we don't typically do the warming center, but we reach out to our partners that you can see we have longstanding relationships with here. So just for your reference, it's probably good to know that many cities don't jump into the social service area. I think we're kind of proud to be a community that has those programming because, again, as you know, our profile demographically, we have people in disadvantaged circumstances. So we want to be sure that they're being attended to. We're not large enough to have, as I say, a whole bunch of staff. So we really do lean on partners. And this is your way of ensuring that safety net. And it was great that the funding was increased. So we were to be able to do more, be impactful. So anyways, I want to make sure that was, those dots were connected for you.
Just real quick to Dave's point, the warming center question came up year before last, and council authorized funding annually now on an ongoing basis for us to support Shepherd House to provide services for basically unhoused during severe weather, and we just funded them again. Like we got their data and we were able to fund them, and that was something that council basically authorized outside and above and beyond this. But again, we couldn't provide the warming center. I mean, there's a lot of building code and issues with that, but there was a facility already doing it, and they were able and willing to track. Because we are dealing with unhoused and the homeless, we basically said their point of origin. So if they were picked up in Kent, we paid for that. So that was a great program that council supported 2 years ago. And we just had our second year of it. And we had some severe cold days and nights. So it was useful. It was great.
Could you speak to the Community Action Council, their request? And has it changed from the past?
Probably giving you more information you need, but Community Action Council's executive director, David Shea, retired. David had been there, I think, forever. Mm-hmm. And they have a new director now, John Kennedy, and he is just not familiar, I don't think, with some of the requirements, but we would not be able to provide assistance to pay property taxes for seniors. That's just not a use of general fund dollars that was problematic for us. And that is not delivery of a direct social service. All the other programs are actually a direct social service is being provided to residents. Offsetting property taxes for seniors is not something that would have fallen under the purview of this program. We did talk to John. I know John, and Dan knows John, and we talked to him and explained to him. CAC had done some funding before. You may remember the trade program, which was a vocational program for youth that were trying to get certifications for Windows and Excel and that. They struggled a little bit because they basically didn't get people that would get through completion. So what we had done with CAC is increase their CDBG funding for the furnace and hot water tank replacement program for low-income households. Mm-hmm. So we've given them more money under that programmatic umbrella than through this program because it didn't work. But what John submitted, unfortunately, did not align. I mean, I understand property taxes are a challenge for people on fixed income, but that is not a social service. That's basically an offset of property taxes. So.
Anybody else from council? Anyone from the audience have something to say? Okay. Is this something that council needs to...
Just informational.
Informational. Thank you.
Thanks, Heidi. Finance, Ms. Chalker.
Yes, so Dave and Rhonda are going to continue the conversation on our consideration for staff funding.
Rhonda said she has a 45-minute presentation. She called me before the meeting. She says, we didn't talk. Do you have something specific you want me to say? And I said, no, not really. So you're good. You're good. We really just wanted to circle back again. You made a few comments at the first meeting about, hey, can you summarize this down? I think Heidi said, can you distill it down to one page? We did try here, and this is all in your packet. So we did try to begin to distill this. We also, in the same spirit, wanted to come up with this. I didn't call it pros and cons. I call it upsides, downsides, maybe something. Is that right? And any sort of critical path. For your, again, trying to distill it down to what makes one option in your mind, I'm not passing judgment here, one may be better than another. So these were kind of the things that we saw as being relevant in each of the categories. And we wanted that, like I said, to sort of put that down on paper, be chewed on, right? Digested. We literally don't have a need for any formal presentation. And I think the previous meeting provided the core presentation. Oh, and on the backside of this, kind of upside down, there were questions about calendar and timing. So basically, follows your election cycles. So it's kind of that May, and we don't see the need for any sort of special something or other, but whenever you go to the voters, it would probably be either the May or the November. Some dates work easier for finance, accounting, and presumably the business community, the community to know when the taxes could be changing, if that's something that's going to be changed. And we try to at least convey that. I think generally speaking, if we have the window of opportunity is going to be early next year, potentially depending on how the revenues income taxes go this year, by the end of the year or the first part of next year, to be able to officially have enough in the bank to have all the debt paid off. Now, again, I told you this, it is paid off, but it'll sit in escrow because you can't pay it early or without penalty kind of thing, some of it. So, but just know that the cash would be there. So from a practical point of view, Rhonda can handle the escrow and that sort of stuff, but essentially have the debt paid off 11 years early from what was originally forecast, which is, that's a great story, right? Like that speaks to, we did this at a time when we were just getting into the downtown reinvestment. And those investments worked. They worked so well. Remember, last couple of years, in our budget, we've said we've had month over month and year over year growth in our income taxes, kind of surprisingly at a time when Kent State has been somewhat contracting. But thankfully, between the downtown and some of our big favorites, you know, Davy Tree, some of the work, all the hires that they've done. I mean, every job counts. Let's be honest. We're a small enough community. Every job, part-time jobs count. That's why I say the downtown matters too, even though you might be like, wow, it's not big payroll. No, but there's a lot of people working down there and everything contributes. So those gains unexpectedly give us this chance to say, can we retire, sunset that debt early, and perhaps ask the voters to replace it either at the same amount, 0.25, so that basically, but that wouldn't be restricted to the police station. So it would be eligible to be used for, very specifically, it goes to the general fund, but we sort of made the public as a commitment to you all and to the public that it would go towards the things that you all said you heard the most from your constituents when you're campaigning. We have a dedicated street paving crew that would work year round just on streets. They wouldn't be constantly rotating amongst all the tasks that Melanie's group does. So that would provide a new focus, a higher degree of focus on that. It would provide the three firefighters that Jamie stood at that microphone and asked you for, gave you his history, and Nick did the same for the police department. So 3-3-3. That's sort of the core proposal. I will say we've met with our bond council once, and we're going to meet again. Actually, we have multiple meetings,
right?
Because one of the other options that Rhonda floated, because she did it in Macedonia, was you could go to 0.5 and offer everybody that's a resident in Kent that's eligible for, that's paying their taxes in good standing, they would be eligible for a 0.25 refund, so that it would keep their payments, their taxes before and after the same. It would increase the people that don't live here would be paying 0.5, but after the reimbursement, people that live here would still be paying what they pay today at 0.25. Now, I have to say, maybe those of you that pay attention, and I'm sure Jeff is in his other hobby at the state level stuff, there's a lot of conversations and a lot of changes in state tax laws that have bounced around. We really want bond counsel's take on the Rhonda concept. She got the approvals of her law departments back then when she did it, so everything was clean. But we're a different city and it's a different time, so we kind of want to really make sure, we don't want to suggest that to you if we think that's going to be open to some problems. We never want to do this. Not when it comes to taxes, right? So we want to make sure. So we're not ready yet to have that answer. If you seem to like the rebate program, I'm not ready to say that I can tell you in good conscience yet. So we need more time on that. And I think we need time on all this stuff to be digesting. But we also are meeting with council, because there is a lot more attention and I don't know if it's a lot more regulation, but certainly it's a tighter restriction on what level of advocacy and who can be advocates for any kind of tax change. Mm. To the point of, is the city allowed to do a one-page summary? Maybe not. In the old days, yes. Maybe not. We don't know for sure yet. It depends on how it's stated, how it's done. If you do, it has to be completely neutral. There can be no doubt. You can leave no room for doubt. So maybe in the old days, you could, I don't want to say advocate, but it's a continuum. And it's right now, it's pressed towards the one end. And that's why, as the council told us in the meeting, normally these are conversations they have with school districts, just like our school district just had their levy. That's why you'll see friends of the levy. You don't see the school system printing flyers, printing anything. They can't go door to door. Staff can't be advocating. Staff can answer questions. I know Tom did that. He did it in this room. He borrowed the room. He answered some questions. But the advocacy role, do we even know what level of advocacy council can play? Like,
I think council's down. Just because they are elected officials.
In the old days, some of you may remember, and often the council would be the ones going door to door saying, hey, because the staff can't go door to door and say, hey. And I'm not saying that's an enjoyable task. Just saying. But even that sounds like, and we're going to get better clarity on this, it sounds like because you're paid, there's at least need to be cautious about what you're doing, how you're saying. So that, we're getting way ahead of ourselves here. So I don't want to freak anybody out and be like, well, we didn't say we're doing anything. Why are you telling me what I should campaign on? I'm not. Forgive me for that. Our job is to kind of look down the road, right? Like, that's kind of what this discussion's about. And that's why I gave you the fast track option, deliberate speed option, and take as long as necessary option. Those are intentionally written that way so that you don't feel, and the community doesn't feel, backed in a corner. We will work with any of those timeframes. At some point, as we start to tighten up the legal interpretations and so forth, that's when it'll kind of be flipped back to you to say, have those conversations in here. What are we thinking? What do we want to direct staff to do? In a perfect, I don't even want to say perfect because that's not the right word. In the quickest option, it would be to get something on the ballot this fall. And it does seem like, at least from our... she didn't like what I said, apparently, about the council. It does seem like you need to go to the voters even to sunset the 0.25. That surprised me. I didn't know that. Rhonda suspected that because in other cities she's seen that happen. For some reason, I didn't think that would be necessary for sunsetting. But in the course of the conversations with the financial representation, that they felt like typically that would go back to the voters too. So you're going to have kind of a complicated thing going back to the voters. You're going to have, hey, do you want to sunset the 0.25? I got to imagine that's an easy sell, right? Like, who's going to say no to that? The better question is going to be, are you willing to put the 0.25 back on and just no longer use that same money that you're paying now for the police station, use it to pay for 333, green staff? And so that's going to be a little interesting write-up. And we've actually, even the ballot language, it's tricky and stuff like that. And you know, nothing's worse than bad ballot language, right? That's the worst. And we were discussing cases that have just happened where ballot language was not here, which I think was in central Ohio, wasn't it?
Yes.
Where they just mess up the ballot language. So lots of things. We'll worry about that stuff. And we'll make sure you're positioned when you're ready to make a decision, give us direction. But I think for now, that's really all. I wanted to just kind of touch on this. We've got these for you, summaries, pros and cons, calendar, gives you more stuff to think about. I guess I don't know if you have any questions. Rhonda, do you have anything you want to add? I mean, your 45 minutes is about up.
No, actually, only if you had questions.
Okay, well then I'm going to turn it back to see if council has any questions for Dave and Rhonda. Anybody from the audience have any comments or questions? Anybody interested in making a motion? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.
Angela, thank you. Coming up to talk about the consideration of a sale of some surplus property.
Thank you. For those of you, some of you may know, some of you may not know, Kent Parks and Recreation actually owns a residential property across the street from our offices at 500 Middlebury. It is a small ranch home, and it was purchased in 2017, so that was almost 10 years ago, prior to my time here with the city. And we have been landlords essentially for that time period, and our tenants are out of the property, and we are looking to sell that property. We really want to get out of the business of being residential landlords, and that property really serves no purpose for the department at this time. So we have met with Kiko Auctions. We have a proposed contract for them to host an auction. They would advertise that. They would have a live auction in person, and they will have a simultaneous online auction at the same time. And that tentative date is scheduled for June 4th. We recently had an appraisal. The property appraised at $150,000 or $150,000. And this would be an absolute auction. So the auction actually starts at zero, and then the price drives up from that point in time. So the other point to mention is whatever the final sale price is, they do add a 10% buyer's premium on top of that, and that is Kiko's commission. So they don't take that out of the sale price of the property.
Thank you, Angela. Any questions from council?
Yeah, I would assume with the auction process or anything, I don't know if there's any, even without an auction, if there's a way to ensure that becomes owner occupied. I don't know if there's any way we can try to make that happen. I would say it's probably pretty unlikely with an auction, but.
I know some of the other properties along that stretch are rentals currently.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if that one.
Is there anything we can do legally to ensure that, or not really?
I don't think so. I've never heard of that.
Honestly. Okay, I'm just asking.
But I mean, good question. It is a good question.
We put up a big sign about our new down payment assistance program right next to the auction sign.
We do that? Probably could. And 3 minutes.
Wait a minute, though. I mean, that's one of the things. If the city owns a property, we generally have been able to choose the buyers, but in an auction.
No, we have to have, just like we bid projects out, it has to be basically blind. We have to go with the highest and best. And so the highest and best could be someone who wants to tear it down and start over and live there, or some landlord who wants to put more students in.
I kind of don't understand that, because, you know, we had that property that Madalena's has now. I don't know that that was the highest and best offer. That downtown corporation. Okay, so that was an exception there. Just wondering. It can't be covenanted or anything like that.
Tracy?
What did you say the appraised value was?
$150,000.
And then what is that zone, that property? You know? Okay. So you couldn't put PAC students into the house then?
Any other questions from council? Any other questions from council? Anyone from the audience? Anyone want to make a motion on council?
I can second that.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Good. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry.
Okay, thanks. Health and Public Safety, Vice Chair Clapper.
I'm assuming Joan didn't come back for this.
My name is Felisa. I'm the Acting Health Commissioner of the Health Department. Nice to meet you all. I'm just here to ask Council if we can accept a grant award from the Food and Drug Administration. This is a grant that the Health Department has had for a while. This grant helps us demonstrate and attain best practices for food safety. It will also help with our FAB accreditation, and it will take some stress off of the staff and alleviate some burden from them from doing FAB and other accreditation work. And the total amount is $10,000.
All right. Any questions from council? Anybody from the audience? Back to council.
Move to approve with emergency.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Melissa. Okay. Thanks, Jeff. We are now at Streets and Sidewalks. Ms. Wallach.
Here we have a consideration of proposed parking ordinance change of Needham Avenue. Ms. Baker, you're up.
I mean, our city's been around a long time, and I'm always surprised when we have our internal meetings that there's still a lot of places that surprise us in terms of where what parking is allowed, where it's not allowed. I can only guess that at some point it made sense, or maybe not. Maybe no one. There's a couple cases of those the last couple of months, and this is the most recent one on Needham where a request came in, and as we dug into it, well, we realized that they were in a bit of a disadvantage. The chief, if he ever gets a new fire truck, would have a hard time getting through that street with parking on both sides. It's so narrow. So we took a look at it. Melanie can report on that.
Yes. So we did take a look at it. And as reported to us, there's no parking restrictions at all. So what we were finding is cars were parking on both sides, leaving very little navigation room in between them. So what we've done and what we proposed after being out there is that we would like to go ahead and have the ordinance amended to read no parking on the south side, which is the location of the fire hydrants. So we would keep cars off of that side. They would be able to park on the north side, but not the south side. But this would also give us one clear lane in and out. So in an emergency situation, emergency vehicles, service vehicles, things of that nature would have clear access to the street. I would like to report that the residents have been notified via letter from the fire chief approximately a week and a half ago with no comments in return. So therefore, we'd like to thank you in advance for your consideration and request that this parking regulation be authorized to go from no parking restrictions to no parking on the south side with the emergency.
Questions from council? Questions from the audience? Back to council.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay, passes. Next is an ordinance change recommended by NPDES Audit.
Yes, thank you. In April of last year, 2025, the Ohio EPA, the Division of Water Service, for service water, conducted their audit of the City of Kent's Municipal Stormwater Management Program. This is underneath our NPDES general permit. The goal of the audit was to determine the City of Kent's compliance with the Ohio environmental laws and regulations as found in Chapter 611 of the Ohio Revised Code, Chapter 374-39 of the Ohio Administrative Code, and the Ohio EPA General National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit. Generally, the City of Kent did well, but received four findings of fact. The findings received covered items such as updating our forms, adding recordable measures, and to follow up on protocols of our stormwater management plan, updating our MS4 map, and showing a current sanitary sewer map with surrounding jurisdictions. That must include Summit County and Village County, as well as updating and amending the existing current ordinances to meet the requirements of the Ohio EPA, ORC, and the AOC. In order to come in compliance with our permit. That is what you have before us. So all other items that have been noted have been met and completed. So we are here with you on the last one. These are the specific ordinances of Chapter 915, 921, the codified ordinances under community development of 1193, 1199, and 1203.
We did work with community development and Bridget directly to review these. Corey Finney, who is our stormwater management senior engineer, is who put these all together and worked with the EPA on this. She would be here, but somehow she got to be away at a fun stormwater convention today. So I'm a little disappointed. Otherwise, she would have been here with the same excitement that I have presenting these code changes. Basically, what you have before you are things that can do go over definitional changes, discharge prohibitions, compliance monitoring, clarification of injunctive relief, some additions to purpose and scopes of them, the development of the comprehensive stormwater plans, sections on easements and maintenance under the community development codes, as well as then ensuring that we have ways for review and or appeals to any kind of concerns that would come through on the stormwater. With that being said, hopefully you had an opportunity to read all these wonderful ordinances and the changes proposed, and I'll be available for any questions.
Awesome. Do you have any concerns that this is going to cost extra money or anything related to making these changes as the recommendations?
I don't see under our division, and I don't believe there'll be anything under community development for us. These are all requirements that most contractors and developers are already completing and doing. Thank you.
Anybody else? Questions from the audience? Back to council.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you very much.
Jim, you're up.
Thank you. We're here tonight to request council's approval to amend our interagency agreement with for the State Route 59 Alternative Transportation Project. That project was started in 2023. The agreement was signed between PARTA, Franklin Township, and the city, and it was done to improve the section of 59 from basically Horning Road, where our project ends, east all the way to 261. A third of that portion of that is in the city, two-thirds is in the township, all of it's in the part of the township's all in the JED. As we were progressing with that project, which would improve walkability, bikeability, and transit usage through that area, we were speaking with the Department of Transportation, which actually owns the road outside the city, and we're asking them if they would participate as part of this project. If we're touching a signal to modify it to make it better to cross the street, those signals are 20 or 30 years old, are they going to want to replace those at this time? And in the end, they've come to us and said, yeah, they'd like to. So the amendment basically adds ODOT as a project sponsor. It would include the replacement of the three signals, and the ODOT's responsibility would be to get the land required for the signal and help fund the project. Since then, they've acquired $2 million to add to the project. So we're looking for your approval to amend the agreement.
Ready? Question number one, is there a downside to this?
Nope.
Question number two, how enthusiastic are they in pursuing other funding sources? How enthusiastic of a partner are they?
Well, they started this without already having this agreement and got the $2 million for us. And pretty much we're at the end. As far as like, we have one more grant to request, and that's through OPWC. We'll be coming to you in another month for that. And that will be the last that we would need to pursue for funding of the project.
And they care about like complete streets, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
That's a priority.
They've been supportive of this project from the beginning.
Awesome. Anybody else on council? Questions from the audience? Back to council to make the motion. I would like to move to approve this partnership with the emergency.
Second.
Any discussion? I think it's awesome. I mean, it's interesting how this has occurred. And I just want to also congratulate you, Jim, because I think you present our city well and our projects well to ODOT. And I think this is a result of that.
Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes.
We're adjourned.